Well, things are changing so fast that it's hard to think about what the future might look like. But pause for a second and force yourself. What will the world look like in, say, 10 years, 15 years, 50 years? Well, the outlines are pretty clear. If the people who run things, powerful forces, and by that we mean very specifically the U.S. government, the Chinese government, the U.N., if they have their way, there will be a lot less private property, a lot less privacy for the average person. And for the average person, a lot of really big decisions will be made not individually, but by machines. So that's clearly the direction we're going. The question is, who wants that? And the answer is very, very few people. That's dystopian, doesn't quite capture it. That's horrifying. That's a nightmare. And so if you had to bring about that future with the consent of the governed, as in a democracy, that would be impossible because no one will ever want that. It's too ugly and sad. It's clearly anti-human. It's a dead end. So how do you do it? Well, you only have two options. You can use force, just put a gun in people's faces and say, do this, accept this, or I'll kill you. But that's messy and hard, and it requires a lot of guns. It also requires a kind of muscular attitude, an aggression, not just a passive aggression. Probably not going to happen. Or you can do something else. You can make people want it. That's very different from convincing them. There's almost no effort to convince you of anything anymore, in case you haven't noticed. They've totally given up on argument as a means of reaching some kind of mutual consent. It doesn't exist anymore. But they can instead make you want it. Well, how would they do that? Well, the fastest way to do that would be by, say, changing your brain. Is that happening? Well, you have to kind of wonder. What was COVID, by the way? It was the other day, it feels like. We haven't really talked about what that was. It wasn't just some random virus. It probably wasn't even just a lab leak accidentally. This was a bioweapons lab run by the Chinese government, paid for in part by the U.S. government, and it went global. But it really went to the West. That's the truth. To the English-speaking world, to Europe. And it seemed to have changed people. So what's going on here? Is something going on here? And if so, what can you do about it? How do you preserve the sovereignty of your own mind? Maybe that's the most important question. Very few people are thinking about this seriously. Lots of people are speculating about it, but very few scientists are looking at the specifics of how this might be done and what you might do about it. In fact, there's really just one that we're aware of, and we're about to meet him. He is German. His name is Michael Nels. He's a medical doctor, a physician. He's a molecular geneticist. And he's written what seems to be an amazing new book called The Indoctrinated Brain, How to Successfully Fend Off the Global Attack on Your Mental Freedom. And we are honored to have him join us now. Dr. Nels, thank you very much.
Oh, I'm very honored to be here. Thank you very much. Actually, it honors my work.
Well, and we're honored to have you. So I sort of non-technically and maybe grossly generalized, summarized this idea, but I'd like you to bring some science to it. That maybe COVID, not just the vax, but the virus itself, changed the way people think and feel about themselves and understand themselves. Do you think that's possible?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible. And it was already shown with SARS-CoV-1, the predecessor of SARS-CoV-2.
Yes.
It was published already in 2007, 2008, papers which showed that the spike protein itself is capable of doing something which we call neuroinflammation. That means kind of a cytokine storm in the brain. And I've worked on this issue for the last 10 to 15 years, actually published a paper, Unified Theory of Alzheimer's Disease, which is Alzheimer's, most people think it's the cause is age, but the real cause of Alzheimer's is actually neuroinflammation and our lifestyle. And so the reason it's age is correlated to it is just because it takes decades to develop
yes.
disease. But neuroinflammation can be caused by many things. It can be caused by excessive fear, by fear-mongering. Neuroinflammation can be caused by bacteria, by viruses, by infection, chronic infections.
Yes.
So it was shown that in order that the hippocampus, it's our autobiographical memory center, which is the center where Alzheimer's starts, needs to be functional, something which we call adult hippocampal neurogenesis, a permanent production of new nerve cells, which have many, many functions we need to talk about. They are essentially our mental immune system. And if this production is essentially shut down, then our mental immune system breaks down and we are free for everything. I mean, we can be conquered and we would even accept it. And so I was working on this mental immune system and
you're describing a physical,
it's physical.
It's physical. This is not emotional. This is not the product of propaganda. You're saying that the way that your brain functions as a physical matter can be changed to make you more controllable.
Emotions essentially change the way the brain works, and strong emotions, fear, for example, particularly in a situation where your mental immune system is down, meaning that your psychological resilience is down, it leads to a very strong effect in the brain, kind of a neurotoxic effect, leakage of molecules out of the neurons, which are recognized by immune cells in the brain. And this recognition leads to an activation of an immune response, a very strong immune response, activating cytokines, pro-inflammatory cytokines, and they attack the hippocampus, our autobiographical memory center, shutting down essentially many, many functions, like, for example, curiosity, like, for example, psychological resilience. It drops, meaning that everything that happens leads to an increased rate of depression. And it shuts down, which I've shown recently and which I've put in my book, it shuts down our ability to think.
Well, you're describing what we're seeing all around us. I have to say, this proves nothing, but I thought it was interesting. I got COVID a couple of years ago, and not the worst sickness I've ever had, but it had the most profound emotional effect for a couple of days. I've never felt that depressed as I did when I had it. I felt defeated. I didn't expect that. I've never heard anybody say that that was a side effect of COVID. Is it?
It is, yeah. So when in 2007, 2008, the first papers came out on how SARS-CoV-1, specifically the spike protein, is able to activate the neuroinflammatory process, shutting down the production of these nerve cells in the hippocampus in our autobiographical memory center, the consequences are clear. In the short term, you are prone to depression. In the long term, you're actually prone to Alzheimer's if you don't change the course of events. Of course, in that time, the spike protein was not, I think, able to actually enter the brain, and they changed that. So when I was actually almost laughing because it was so deeply depressing in a way, so my reaction was kind of funny. I said, when the Nobel Prize was given in 2023 to this mRNA program bringing the spike protein into humans by genetic engineering, the two researchers who got the Nobel Prize actually said in an interview, well, we came up with this idea 15 years ago. So when you look back 15 years ago, it was clear that the spike protein is a bioweapon against the brain, particularly the part of the brain which we call our mental immune system, which is the very, very important part that makes us human, you know, which allows us to think, which allows us to be curious, which allows us, to explore the world and develop a culture, everything. So the spike protein essentially attacked humankind, the very basis of humans. Of course, at that time, the spike protein was kind of not very dangerous because it was an external inflammation outside the brain, which of course is transmitted to the brain, that's known. And so we had an indirect neuroinflammation. If you really want to attack the brain, you have to get the spike protein into the brain. That's really dangerous. And so two things happened actually here. So first of all, they changed the SARS-CoV-1 into SARS-CoV-2 by including this furin cleavage site into the spike genome, in the gene of the spike protein. So if you insert this cleavage site, you create essentially a target for a molecular scissor that all our cells have, you know, which we call furin. If furin cleaves the spike protein two halves, we have two subunits, S1 and S2. And the S1 subunit is the outer part, interacts with the same receptor that is also our fear receptor, our danger receptor on the immune cells. And that leads to triggers essentially a cascade of events, which at the end leads to an output of enormous amounts of pro-inflammatory cytokines, each of one of them, each individual of them, the whole cascade of different ones, interleukin 1, interleukin 6, TNF-alpha, interleukin 17, whatever, all of them were shown to shut down the production of new nerve cells in the hippocampus, which we require for curiosity, psychological resilience, and our ability to think.
And those are the effects of the vax, of the mRNA vax.
Not only the vax, the virus itself.
I think you may be, I mean, this, it's a lot to take in, but you may be answering the question, why after the mRNA vax was shown not to stop transmission, did governments continue to push it on their populations?
Absolutely. They pushed it even on unborn children, you know,
and they, yes,
women who are pregnant, young children. So I, these are all different pieces of a puzzle I couldn't understand. And only when I realized it's not about health, it's not about not even money, it's about conquering the human mind, then it totally made sense suddenly. And all the pieces of the puzzle fell together seamless. And I had a picture in front of me, which clearly showed what they are up to. And that is really to undermine the human ability to think. And it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that, which I show in the book. Because we need this production of these new nerve cells, not only for curiosity, psychological resilience, or our ability to think. They are also necessary for memorizing and retrieving new memories. So if you shut down this production and force the hippocampus to memorize all these different stories, these fear-mongering narratives, then these narratives will enter the brain. They will be memorized in the hippocampus, but for a cost. They will override pre-existing memories. There's no other way around it, because you have no production of new nerve cells allowing new memories formed without harming previous ones. So what happens is you override with the narratives, with the fear narratives, with the technocratic narratives, you override your pre-existing memories, your individuality, or your personality, and change it.
If intentional, this would be the most evil thing ever done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When I wrote the book, my wife actually is the person who first reads it and corrects it, and she almost got a heart attack doing that. I mean, she had really problems reading chapter by chapter, because the evil that the book reveals is traumatic.
So you spent your entire life within science.
Yeah.
And so the people who did this or who made it possible are, in some cases, I'm sure people you know, but certainly the kind of people you know.
Yeah.
How hard was it for you to reach the conclusion that those people were responsible for something so evil?
For me, it was extremely difficult to accept, because the last 15 years I spent my life, essentially, I wrote actually 4 or 5 national bestsellers in Germany, and now they are going to be translated in English, because this book is now making its way in the English world, of course, and is, so to speak, the others will trail behind it. But I spent the last 15 years trying to convince people that Alzheimer's is not something you can't avoid when you get older. But it was not about Alzheimer's. It was about something else. Alzheimer's is just the tip of an iceberg of a society whose mental immune system is not functioning. The cause of Alzheimer's is the inability to produce these new nerve cells over several decades. That's the cause of Alzheimer's. So you have to reactivate this production to prevent it. But since it takes decades, the cases of Alzheimer's are just the tip of an iceberg of a society whose mental immune system is down. Give you another example. If the psychological resilience is down because the production of these nerve cells is down, then the likelihood increases that you get depression. And depression became the number one disease in 2017. Actually, the WHO said in 2019 it's now the most common disease on Earth, number one. So if you realize depression is inversely correlated to the production of these new nerve cells, that means in 2019, even maybe in 2017, the mental immune system of the human society was down at, or it was at its lowest level. We were easy to conquer. We were easy to accept what was happening.
So for those of us who've noticed that people who've taken the mRNA vax and boosters seem different psychologically.
Yeah.
We're not imagining that.
Yeah, no. It's that's what's really happening. You see, people who have not a high production of these cells in the hippocampus, they act normally during the day. On a normal situation, they do whatever humans do, and you don't realize it. I saw that actually even in the part of my of people I know that when I saw them at parties, we could talk about everything which is trivial. But as soon as you start to talk about something more difficult, it was before 2020, you realize they don't want to put their brain in a working mode. They just avoided these topics. And these very people who are not interested in really thinking were the ones who actually took the shots very quickly. Because you have to see the mental immune system, as I already counted off, curiosity is lacking, so you. And the other side of the coin of curiosity is psychological resilience, because being curious, meaning you enter a new space, new thoughts, and everything that's new is per se potentially dangerous. So you
Yes.
have to have a high psychological resilience to enter this new space. So if both is down, curiosity and psychological resilience, then you accept everything. And particularly if something comes with a lot of fear, oh, you could die, your family could die, everything is very, very dangerous. Then you fall back to I would say cortical reflexes like something that is inborn in us, behavior that's inborn. And one behavior that's inborn, of course, in humans is and that's natural, is if there's a danger, you could go into the group. You don't try to be isolated. You go, you follow the group. And if people tell you the group is going to take this vaccine, then everybody runs and I want to have it too. You don't think, you just follow the crowd.
The effects of spike proteins on the human brain, just to be clear about what I think you said, were known, well known by the time COVID was loosed on the world and the mRNA vaccines were
Well,
developed.
I didn't discover that. I just used the papers and the publications which were out there to come to this conclusion. And if I can read these papers, everybody else can do that. They are public. It's not like it's hidden information. So that was clear. You see, when the virus broke out, by whatever reason, it was long not clear to me, and there's no eyewitness who tells us, yeah, we actually did it on purpose.
Yes.
And everybody knew that the virus, based on this viewing cleavage site, produces a spike version that can enter the brain and has all these detrimental effects on our mental health. So that was really bad. And even if that was not on purpose, what was clearly on purpose was the mRNA injection program. That was on purpose. It was forced. And here, the people who actually forced us or forced people psychologically to undergo this injection, they had a choice. They had many, many choices. They had the choice, for example, to change the mRNA that it doesn't contain the cleavage site, that the spike protein is not able to enter the brain. They could have had another choice. They could have taken proteins instead of mRNA, which is modified to stay long in our body, which doesn't make any sense for an in for getting an immune response, and that doesn't make any sense at all. They had another choice. They could have taken not the spike protein, which is dangerous. They could have taken, for example, the nucleocapsid, which is another part of the virus, which is not dangerous to us, and actually was proven to give us a very good immunity if you have a natural infection. So that it was proposed. There are papers out there in 2020 proposing that, and it was ignored. And then the mRNA itself is dangerous because you put it, or you have to package it because it's not very stable. You have to
Yes.
package, and the packaging itself is dangerous. It's very pro-inflammatory, meaning again attacking the brain because it causes neuroinflammation. And in addition to that, it was shown that a large portion of it, actually of the mRNA, packaged with the lipid nanoparticles, can actually enter the brain. It was the and lipid nanoparticles were actually produced or invented to enter the brain.
So that, I'm asking you to stop it for a second, that when the injections were first rolled out, I remember reading someone say, actually, this could cross the blood-brain barrier.
Yeah, sure. That's why.
And that person was shouted down immediately. You're a conspiracy nut. You're crazy. I think we now admit that that's the case.
No, it was already published by the European Medical Association actually published a paper showing that 4% of the circulating mRNA can enter the brain. And what was shocking to me actually is the way they did the injections itself. That even that is revealing. If you really want to make sure that a large proportion is circulating, you have to make sure that you inject it in a way that the likelihood that it enters the bloodstream is higher. And when I was trained as a medical doctor, I learned that if I have to give an injection that has to stay at the injection place,
yes,
you actually draw a little bit blood. And if there's blood to be drawn, you know you are in a vein or in an artery or something. So you change the position of the needle tip.
To inject it into fat.
Yeah, in the fat or in the muscle,
yes,
but not in the vein. But here there was clearly the indication, or there was actually the rule, no, with this one, we have to inject it without drawing the blood first, without checking if it's in the bloodstream. And that's the major reason, actually, why, for example, young adults who are usually muscular, doing sport, had so often myocarditis, even deadly myocarditis, because they have the big veins. So they get the full dose. That's the explanation.
So you believe, based on the way it was designed, manufactured, and administered, that it was intentional, that the people who did this wanted it to get into the brain.
Well, everything population. Is this whole list of what I just given you, of things which could have been different if there were no intention, was not even considered, or if people proposed that it was negated. So I think, let's put it this way. In my book, I only bring all the scientific evidence. I bring all the pieces of the puzzle. I show how the pieces of the puzzle can be put together seamless. And so it's very likely it's the correct picture. But at the end of the day, I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just the prosecutor saying this might be the case. I have my personal opinion, but at the end, it's the reader who is the jury.
I was interested to notice where this was administered, these shots. Mm-hmm. So China, no. I don't think China forced its population to take the mRNA shots. Is that correct?
It was only a testing ground, essentially. And
right.
Because people were fearful enough, actually, at the time when, or a year later, my wife and I were in Egypt on a vacation just for a week. And we talked to the people there who went with us to the big sites they have there, the ancient ruins and so forth. And we talked to them, and they said they actually had to pay money. There was like an auction going on, who gets the shot first. So I don't know if you have to even to push people to do that. It's evil to do that, of course, but the psychological pressure was so high that that they got a huge proportion of people already.
It didn't seem accidental to me that you had this COVID shot campaign, and then within a year, they opened the borders and changed the population of the country, and in a way that most countries would never accept what's happening in the United States right now.
Yeah, there are many things going on at the moment. You see, if you look at what I'm describing here, it's all about the autobiographical memory center. And the autobiographical memory center records what we think, what we experience, what we discuss with our friends. Everything is recorded, but it cannot record everything. So it's kind of a misnomer here. It records everything what it can record. And it has a threshold. And the threshold is it has to come with emotion. So you can only learn new things if they are kind of emotional to you. So
yes.
So stereotypical behavior, you don't remember that you did something you do every
right.
day.
Exactly.
So we know all that. So it has to come with an emotion. So if you really want to transform a brain, so first you have, it's a two-step process. First, you block the neurogenesis, the production of new nerve cells in the hippocampus. Then you come up with the stories you want to install. But since they have to come with an emotion, you can't come with the same story every day. You have to change the story day by day. You have to come up with new stories with the same intent. Something is breaking down. The world is shut down. Everything is dangerous. I'm losing my job because immigration. My family might be killed because we have an atomic war based on these local wars. We have the war against climate change. Everybody will drown because the water will rise. all these stories come up day by day. Actually, the World Economic Forum has a program, a brochure they bring out every January, and they talk about permacrisis, and they have hundreds of points that they are actually listed in my book, what they have in mind or in their background, where we can start the next crisis. We need to change the story so that at the end of the day, your personal history is overwritten by these fear-mongering stories, and you have to change it, otherwise it doesn't work. So that explains it. It explains something very interesting, actually, by the way. I couldn't understand, because as I show in the book, it was all well planned. I mean, there were plans already out there, 2018, 2000, yeah, the program 201, we know that, everything was planned. But when it really happened, actually happened in 2020, our government in Germany, for example, had new rules every day, changing rules all the time. And I said, they're behaving like they didn't know what they do, but everything was so well planned. I mean, the vaccine was out so quickly. Everything was planned, but they did as if they had no idea what they should do. But in reality, if you look from the point of view of the hippocampus, of your autobiographical memory, this changing of rules is part of the plan. It has to be part of the plan, because changing the rules mean you have to memorize every day new rules, and they override your memory center. And that's
so you, after a while, can't remember what life was like before the rules.
Exactly. You see, if you want to install, and this is all about installing a new operating system. Yeah, you already, in your introduction, you said, and you didn't say it, but it's like an artificial intelligence
yes.
controlled society by a social scoring system. And I call it in my book, let's say, an evil social operating system, which you can actually abbreviate by SOS. Yeah, quite nicely. It means something else, but we know where it ends. And, so, if that's the plan, and you alluded to it, and I'm pretty sure everybody who reads Schwab's book knows what's going on and what they are intending, then it's clear you have to create a situation where there's no other fence anymore. There's no fence where you can see and the grass is greener on the other side. Look at other dictatorships, fascism in Germany, Stalinism, whatever.
Yes.
There was always a fence, a border where it was different on the other side. But we have to think here global. If everybody is attacked, then there is no border. There is no other side. There's no way, no place you can hide, no place you can go. But there's another border in your brain, the brain of history. You know it was different in the past. But once you start overriding the past, then even this border is gone. There is no way you can, there's no refugee anymore. Nothing you can go back to and think about, okay, it was different in the former times. We have to get back to that place, to this time. We have to change something.
Yes.
And the ability to change something comes with individuality. Creativity, individuality are closely linked. But what's happening here is we destroy individuality. That means we destroy the creative power of humanity. And then we just follow the rules that the artificial intelligence.
So you're really describing a kind of mass Alzheimer's. I mean, with no, because a person without memory isn't fully a person.
Yeah, I give you another word for that. You see, the ability to think, there was a Nobel Prize given for that actually in 2002 to Daniel Kahneman, as a psychologist. The Nobel Prize was in economics. How do we come to decisions in difficult times, so to speak? That's what the Nobel Prize, of course, it was for businesses. But nevertheless, he described a mental energy that we need to activate thinking. And in my book, I describe what this mental energy is. It comes from the production of these new nerve cells. So if you shut down the ability to think, then you are stuck with the non-thinking brain, which he called System 1. So system two is the thinking brain. The thinking system one is our default action during the day, which doesn't require any energy. We call it system one. Another Nobel Prize winner who was trying to find out where our consciousness is and our consciousness in the brain, Francis Crick, he got the Nobel Prize for discovering DNA. He published a paper in 2003 with Koch, his colleague. And he said system two is great that we have it. It's essentially the motor of our society, you know, the thinking ability.
Yes.
But it's also good to have system one, which allows us in standard situations to actually react in a way that doesn't cost any mental energy. And he named the system one the zombie mode.
Zombie mode.
Zombie mode. So if you are not able to engage system two anymore, and that's what my book describes under the attack of the virus and the fear mongering and a lifestyle that's not very healthy, then of course we are stuck in a zombie mode, and I really fear the zombie society very much.
A couple of questions. What does this do to religious faith, which was at the center of all societies until the Second World War? Does a zombie mode, does a zombie population have religious faith?
I'm not sure. If you were religious to begin with, you certainly the drive will be still religious belief. But again, religious belief is based on memory. And if memory is overwritten, I think I gave you already the answer.
Yes, you did. What can you do about it? To the people watching who had the mRNA shots, mm-hmm. I think most of whom regret it.
Yeah, sure.
My sympathy goes out.
Yeah.
But what is this reversible?
It's reversible. Actually, this is what my paper, Unified Theory of Alzheimer's Disease, is all about, is that the power of the adult hippocampal neurogenesis lies in the fact that the hippocampus, or autobiographical memory center, has the ability to produce new nerve cells every day and every night. And this production rate actually doesn't decline if we grow older. Actually, even 80 years old have a production rate which is similar to 18 years old. So that's why Alzheimer's is not natural. It's based on a lifestyle that doesn't allow an efficient production. An efficient production needs what everything that grows needs. Let's say micronutrients in humans, maybe physical activity, everything that was natural before we entered the modern world. So Alzheimer's was not a disease 100 years ago. It was unknown, essentially. But the modern world changed our way so far away from our natural needs that that the production rate is actually low. And that was the reason in 2017 that depression rates were high. It's a very strong indicator. In 2019, for example, Alzheimer's was the number three deadly disease in Europe and in the Americas. So it's all about the hippocampus. So it was already damaged long ago, over the decades before 2020 was coming up, and there everything accelerated. Just to give you an example, in 2020 compared to 2019, depression rates, you remember, it was the highest 2017-2019 worldwide, tripled in the United States, you know, in 2020 due to the measurements, to the measures, to the mandates, to everything.
Yes.
Because everything that was done inhibited the production of new nerve cells. For example, closing of sports centers. If you do sport, let's say as a prehistoric person, you have to leave the cage, you know, the cave. I mean,
yes,
the cave. You leave the cave and you go outside, and you have to remember where it might be danger, where is maybe a tree full of fruits, where you can find something to eat, whatever. So we have to remember. So every time we walk around, we activate a number of hormones. Growth hormone, erythropoietin, even our muscles produce hormones like irisin. And all these hormones have the function to make us physically more able to do the next hike outside, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a training effect. But what I show in the book here is that every hormone is an activator of adult hippocampal neurogenesis. So if you start doing physical exercise, you actually enhance your mental abilities. And of course, if anything that has to grow must get everything it needs as a nutrient. So if you have deficiencies in certain nutrients that are required for the production of these nerve cells, it will be shut down. One such nutrient, for example, is vitamin D or omega-3 fatty acids. It was shown that a low level of vitamin D accelerates brain aging. Particularly, it accelerates the development of depression and Alzheimer's. So we have to raise the vitamin D level to a level that is natural. The natural level would be 125 nanomole per liter. It was shown, by the way, the same level of 125 nanomole per liter. Peer-reviewed paper, meta-analysis, showed nobody would die of COVID if the level is 125 nanomole. So it's not only good for our mental immune system, it's also good for our physical immune system. And for me, it was totally clear it's not about health when I realized that there's a strong agenda against vitamin D supplementation. So it's not, it was like a sword with two cutting edges, you know, where first of all, you cut down the physical immune system, making people prone to deathly, to a disease, which would not be deathly under a high level of vitamin D. And that's proven. It's caused, the causality is proven. So you have 125 nanomole, zero death. But of course, if you want to install a new world order, which everybody accepts, even if you want to make people believe that the injection is the only way out of the mRNA, then you have to have some people who actually die.
So how do you get enough vitamin D?
Usually it's supplementation. It's not very, very difficult. And to get to a level that is ideal for brain health, ideal for immunological health, it's about 125 nanomole per liter. That's the level you should have. In Germany, for example, people in winter have like 20, 25 nanomole. And the likelihood of deadly COVID, for example, is increased dramatically. So, for example, when the first studies came out, that was before the injection program enrolled, the jabs were, you know, given to people. In fall of 2020, the German Cancer Research Center published a paper, 9 of 10 COVID deaths can be prevented just by raising the vitamin D level. But nobody was interested in that.
And you believe that there is an active effort to suppress vitamin D or to...
Absolutely. The very journal, the most prestigious clinical journal that we know of is the New England Journal of Medicine. That's why all the clinical trials on the mRNA were published there, you know, and they accepted everything that was going this way. So it was very intriguing for me to realize that when I saw a paper in 2022 on bone health and vitamin D, which was, how much time we have, but this paper was bogus. You know, it should not have been accepted because it was stupid. It was just a stupid paper, to be honest. People who had already had I do it very short. They had a vitamin D level already, which is totally in agreement with bone health. Then they were separated in two groups randomly. One group got an additional vitamin D. The other group didn't get any. So you have two groups which were already have a vitamin D level which is sufficient for bone health. Then one group gets a little bit more vitamin D, and then the two groups were compared if they had more fractures over 5 years. Of course, there is no difference because bone health was already taken care of. But based on this study that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine, an editorial was published in the same paper, in the same journal, a decisive verdict on vitamin D. And the editors come to the conclusion that nobody, even with a deficiency, needs vitamin D. Doctors should stop prescribing vitamin D or even checking the vitamin D status. And people shouldn't waste money using...
Oh, come on.
Yeah, it was the New England Journal of Medicine. And in Germany, actually, it was Medscape, an article by a German professor. He actually said in a journal, in Medscape, and that's the most influential information journal for health practitioners worldwide, mainly financed by pharma industry. And this guy said it's actually a Nazi thinking to prescribe vitamin D or things like that, because that's where the idea of supplementing micronutrients actually was born, in his opinion. And so giving vitamin D, if you have to think about as a physician, if you give vitamin D, you're actually following Nazi ideology.
This is so dark.
It's extremely dark.
Where is it coming from?
Well, as I said, when I read Schwab's book, from the World Economy Forum about COVID and the Great Reset, and the Great Reset, as you already alluded to in your introduction, is not something we would welcome if we were, mentally, mentally in a healthy state. We would actually, say, oh, God, no. So it's clear they want to install that. It's the plan for 2030. And it's not only in his book, actually, when you go through the government documents, which I show in the book as well, government documents in Germany, 2030, for example, they talk about a post-voting society, that artificial intelligence knows better than we know what good is good for us and that voting is not necessary anymore. So it's an abolishing of democracy. So that's one thing. And of course, people, actually, there was another document I found, official governmental document, that they say in 2030, people will hope that based on climate change, the narrative here, that we actually will be controlled. We want to be controlled by artificial intelligence so that we can have a future for our children. But to be perfectly honest, this book is a counter-narrative because a humane counter-narrative, because I strongly believe if we have enough mental diversity, enough individuality in our society, we will come up with ideas that will save us, you know, from destruction like pollution and other things, you know. We'll come up with ideas, I'm pretty sure. But at the moment, we have a society based on the depression rates, on the Alzheimer's rates, from everything that we know of, all the power meters, that our society is not mentally healthy. And this is what my book is all about, to change the world into a society that has more mental health, that something which we call democracy is actually possible. I mean, democracy means the individual has the power to decide. But if our individuality, our mental immune system is destroyed, we either not decide because we are fearful, or we don't allow ourselves an opinion because we fear the consequences.
The average person who's made it this far, 45 minutes in, is terrified, also recognizes that what you're saying is substantially true because it comports with what we see all around us, the death of curiosity, of creativity, the hive mind, herd mentality, all happening all around us. But what are the steps, particularly for those who submitted to the mRNA jab, what are the steps you take to retain your psychological resilience?
The first thing I would propose very eagerly is, of course, read my book. But they wouldn't be able to do that. Maybe they wouldn't be interested. I mean, curiosity is down. Everything is down. But what people suffer from, many people suffer from, is what we call brain fog, you know, consequences of the jab or of the infection, yeah, which we call also post-vac or long COVID. And what I show is that this neuroinflammatory insult on the brain caused by the spike protein leading to a cascade of events in the cell, in these immune cells, which are in our brain. In this cascade, which leads to the production of these pro-inflammatory cytokines, is a molecule which we call GSK3-beta. I don't think I have to discuss it in more detail, but GSK3-beta is just a molecule, a signal transducer. And the natural inhibitor of the signal transducer is lithium. And it was shown that lithium at very low doses, not the doses you use for bipolar disorder, right, or manic depression, doses which are 100 folds lower, 100 fold, like 1 milligram or so, maybe maximum 5 milligram, is sufficient to block, it's a natural inhibitor, to block this cascade, to get rid of the neuroinflammatory response. I already proposed this in a book which I called the Corona Syndrome. It's not published in English yet. But in 2021, I said, besides vitamin D, lithium would be able to block the cytokine storm. And at the end of 2022, just 2 years ago, 1.5 years ago, a paper was published. Patients had to go to the hospital, severe COVID, and they were on the brink of having to go to the intensive care unit because breathing problems. So they randomized these people into groups. They got standard treatment, but one group got lithium. After only a few days, the cytokine storm was completely shut down. The people were released from the hospital in half the time than the others, and not a single person died. So lithium is the key. Actually, I can prove that lithium is essential to humans. It's essential. By the way, that's another funny story. The World Health Organization claims, I have found a paper from the World Health Organization where they show it's essential for goats, for rats, for rodents. I can show in papers it's essential for essentially every animal on Earth that has, where it has been tested. But the World Health Organization argues it's not essential for humans. But I can tell you, if you would take lithium, you not only get rid of your brain fog, you also start, as was shown, to activate adult hippocampal neurogenesis. So in my paper of 2016, Unified Theory of Alzheimer's Disease, I show that lithium as a single molecule can actually stop the progression of Alzheimer's.
Given that you have, I think, seen and described in your book the big picture of what's actually going on, all these different threads are part of one thing. Has it changed your view about people or changed your view of the spiritual world? I mean, this is so evil that, and you said it's not about money exclusively, and it's not about elections. It's much bigger. I mean, how has that changed you?
Well, in the last chapter, which is a chapter of hope, where I show we can change that, we can empower ourselves again. Because you have to understand, we talk a lot everywhere about how it happened, what happened, how it was instrumentalized, all the different steps, all the evil things. But we need to know why it happened. And when we know why, then we know the target, and we know the target, in this case, the hippocampus, we know how to change things. But so the last chapter is about that. But in the last chapter, I also discuss with myself why it actually happened in the first place. What are these people? And I found a couple of books about the and papers, publications, peer-reviewed, that if you are empowered, if you, the more power you have, something develops, which we call acquired sociopathy. And maybe that's behind that, that people are have kind of a godlike, you know, self-esteem.
Yes.
And really believe that they do the right thing in their worldview, you know. And they might think that we have to eradicate the humankind to save humankind, whatever. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what these people think. It's more important what the reader is thinking, what we all are thinking, because we are the majority. And at the moment, about 20%, I guess, or maybe even 25 to 30% of the people worldwide realized, they already 20% realized it very early, 25 to 30% realized it meanwhile in total, I guess, what's going on. And what I argue is if each one of them makes it possible to convince somebody else about what's going on, then we are 50 to 60%. We are a majority again. And as I alluded to already, the people who are not really clear what's going on and don't want to know what's going on, they still follow the mass. And if the mass is 50 to 60%, people who can think, if we can convince them that there's another majority somewhere else, a majority of people who want a humane future for our children, then we all will prevail. I'm 100% sure.
Last question. You live in a country, a product of society that's, I think, impressive, but is conformist.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how are you treated in Germany?
Well, if the mainstream is ignoring me, of course, you know. Wikipedia starts to write interesting stuff about me.
Oh, that's the CIA's.
Yeah, I feel kind of
information outlet.
Yeah. My Wikipedia account up to a year from back a year was kind of pristine. It was only my science career in there and stuff I did. And now it's not pristine anymore, but I told my wife, it's an honor now. I mean, it's like I'm recognized, you know, particularly my ideas are recognized, and that's the most important part, you know. So, but besides that, not much happened. I don't want to, you know, ask for it now, of course, yeah. But so far, we have a very strong community of people like you, who spread the word, who do extremely important work. I mean, I have to thank you for that. The work you're doing and many people in Europe doing worldwide are doing, helping to spread the news, spreading the information. I think it's the most important thing at the moment that I can think of. And I have good contact, meanwhile, to all of them. That's really good.
It is important, the most important. Dr. Michael Nels, The Indoctrinated Brain, in case you want to get that right away. Thank you.
I thank you.
I appreciate it.
Free speech is bigger than any one person or any one organization.
Societies are defined by what they will not permit.
What we're watching is the total inversion of virtue.